312-981-7200 if you want to call or text the Patty Vasquez Show on WGN 720. Coming up on February 26th, it is time for Chicagoans to vote. But early voting has started already, and we have in studio with us mayoral candidate Paul Vallis, who I know has been working very hard trying to get his message out, making all the rounds. You've gone to pretty much every mayoral forum that I've seen invitations for and broadcasts of. So how are you doing, sir?
Fine. And you know, it's funny, at most of these forums, you get 1.5 minute introductions and 1 minute, you know, responses to questions, 1 minute closings. So I tallied up the other day that I've been to like 28 forums, and I think I've spoken for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
2.5 hours.
Well, tell the truth. Who is your favorite moderator at any of the mayoral forums? I'm kidding. I'm not going to make you answer.
You were, of course. You know?
Thank you.
And, but I told Art Norman that this afternoon, too.
Exactly.
So sorry about that.
Well, as you know, the big news of the day in Chicago, and this isn't just an issue of people getting jammed in traffic because of Lakeshore Drive being closed due to the structural problems on a viaduct. This is a concern that we have because this is a bridge that was, the viaduct was built in 1986. Mm-hmm. The inspections are every 2 years, and in 2017 it was given a passing grade of fair condition. Mm-hmm. I have to believe that there are other situations throughout the city of Chicago that need to be addressed. What are your plans for our infrastructure in Chicago, and how do we pay for that?
Well, let me just tell you that and I want to give a context. As you know, since I announced in April, I was one of the first named candidates to announce while Emmanuel was still in the race.
Yes.
I laid out a long-term financial plan to, in effect, do three things. One is to address the unfunded pension liability. I've laid out specifically how that could be done through a reasonable state agenda, through what I call effective budget cuts, the type of budget cuts that don't impact services, but rather things like, getting a handle on procurement, reducing contractual costs, overtime. We're spending three times the level of overtime we used to spend when I was city budget director in the 90s during the city's budget crisis during that period. People forget that I was actually the city's budget director before taking over the Chicago Public Schools, taking workman's comp out of the, out of the finance committee. You know, I've laid out 12 areas where I believe efficiencies can be secured. So through the combination of state agenda and I think what we can do to reprioritize the budget. And let me point out that the city controls $20 billion in revenue. The city has a budget of $9 billion, but when you include the schools, the park district, the CTA, the CHA, the airports, the sewer, water, it's $20 billion in revenue that the city is spending a year. So I am supremely confident that I'm going to be able to address the pension funding issues because it's a four-year ramp up. It's not a single-year ramp up. We've got to put close to $1 billion more in the pension funds. But by protecting our share of state revenues that have been diverted or that we've been blocked from getting during the previous administration, now that Pritzker obviously is governor, hopefully that will continue to occur, combined with the type of efficiencies that I can bring to the budget. And need I remind your listeners out there that I took a $1.4 billion structural deficit when I took over to Chicago Public Schools in 1995. It was a projected four-year structural deficit. And when I left the district with six balanced budgets, I left the district with $1 billion in cash balances. So I believe that I can address the pension funding issues and structurally balance the budget while capping future property tax increases, so I can impose a property tax, so that I can put a permanent cap on property tax increases and fees, and I can reduce fines, and I can go in and I can get rid of these obnoxious red light cameras, etc. I'm absolutely convinced. And if people go online to ValisForAllChicago.com or they Google the City Club, where I actually made this presentation before the City Club, and I've also done some, YouTube videos live and live streaming. You'll see. If you want to, don't want to count sheep and you want to be put to sleep really quickly, you'll actually watch my half an hour presentation. But the bottom line is, it can be done. I can do it. I've done it before, and I can do it again. Let me tell you what I haven't counted, which is money that we can use for other things. I haven't counted such things as casino gambling and gaming and sports betting. Why? Because, I don't think we should be funding pensions on unreliable revenue sources. But I also didn't count those revenues because once those revenues become available, I would like to use those revenues for neighborhood-based infrastructure, getting lead out of the water so that homeowners and landlords don't have to pay for it, doing streets and alleys and curbs and sidewalks, etc. We need to be investing $200-$250 million a year that we would get from these casinos into our infrastructure, because our infrastructure is decaying. That's number one. Number two, I don't count cannabis. If they're going to legalize cannabis, I want to make sure the revenues go to community-based social services, mm-hmm. like opioid and drug addiction services, which is something obviously my family knows about. My family has considerable experience with, health, like mental health and wellness centers. They should have one in every police district, working with the police department, working with the schools, legal aid services, other social services, occupational training for displaced adults or previously incarcerated, etc. So, I'm looking at those revenues to be revenues that we can invest in the community. Now, let me speak to the issue of the major infrastructure projects. I have proposed trying to take advantage of the tax increment financing windfalls. Right now, next year, we're going to be diverting close to $700 million in tax increment financing of property taxes through tax increment financing to finance, these development initiatives. And let me point out, that's not counting in Lincoln Yards. An initiative which I have, which I oppose.
I think people aren't even familiar with what Lincoln Yards are. Is it a development for entertainment? Are they thinking something like the Rosemont Entertainment
District? It's a massive development that on the north side that they want to subsidize with about $1 billion in property taxes, which they will divert over a series of years in order to invest in their infrastructure so that they can support building these high-rise apartment buildings so they can, so they can put another 12, 15,000 people in an area that's already gentrifying and that is already overcrowded. And they've talked about building a stadium, which I think is now off the table, or doing this this World Music Theater, which will starve out the smaller music venues. Anyway, there's all sorts of problems with that initiative, but they're trying to ramrod it through before Rahm Emanuel leaves office. But let me speak to the issue of tax increment financing districts. These districts are going to expire. And when these districts expire, there's going to be property tax revenues that are then freed up that can go back to the local governments. And I have said that what we could do, because, over the next 10 years, most of the TIFs or most of the big income generating TIFs, assuming they don't approve the Lincoln Yards TIF, are going to expire unless they renew these TIFs. Well, what I've said is we could conceivably take advantage of that revenue now. We could go out and we could issue bonds and we could amortize the interest so that the bonds, we would begin paying off those bonds when the TIF revenues begin to expire. And then we could use that bond revenue to invest in major infrastructure projects, because we need billions of dollars in infrastructure investment. And what are we going to do? Are we going to raise property taxes? How can we? And the problem is, the longer we wait to repair the infrastructure, the more expensive it is going to be.
No doubt.
So we could strategically take advantage of the TIF windfall now, when the repairs will be cheaper than to wait another 5 to 10 years for the thing to collapse. And I think, given the fact that there is going to be a major capital bill in Springfield, we need to make sure we're there, not only so that we get our mass transit dollars, and not only so that we get money for capital improvements in Chicago, but we need to be realistic. I mean, whether you like Trump or not, Trump's kind of an infrastructure guy, and, we should be aggressive about working with the federal government so that we can secure the infrastructure monies we need. But what I've attempted to do in my financial plan is to get at the core issues of the budget, which is the unfunded pension liabilities, because they're not going to change the Constitution to change pension benefits.
No.
And let me point out to your listeners, the new employees who have been hired since, I think, 2015, they're called Tier 2 employees, are actually going to pay more into the system than they'll ever get back. So eventually those Tier 2 employees are going to be subsidizing the Tier 1 employees. So what are we going to do, punish them more?
Well, and how hard will it be to lure more, you know, workers to take those jobs?
So I believe, in a nutshell, that we can address the pension issue once and for all. We can structurally balance our budget. I've laid out a whole series of initiatives to improve public safety, to take advantage of existing federal, state, and local resources to stimulate economic development. We don't have to go into that, or if I get a question about that. But the bottom line is, I want to have revenue set aside so we can do basic infrastructure repair. So there are options out there. There's the casino money. There's the TIF windfall. There's revenues that we can access. So we can get Lakeshore Drive repaired. We can get these bridges repaired. We can get lead. We can replace the lead pipes without sticking it to homeowners and landlords.
We are talking to mayoral candidate Paul Vallis. The election is on February 26th. More conversation with our guests when we come back on 720 WGN. If you check out the polling for the mayoral race coming up on February 26th, I believe that Undecided is leading the pack, or so I've been told.
It is, decisively.
Joining me in studio is mayoral candidate Paul Vallis, and we're talking about the issues that are important to Chicagoans, but they're also important for the state of Illinois and for the Midwest and for the country, because we are one of the biggest cities in the country, and we have a lot of issues here. And Scott actually has a question that I was going to ask you myself from the 312. Here's Scott. Hey, Scott, what do you want to say?
Hi, Mr. Vallis. I'm calling. I want to find out, first off, with the recent revelations of Burke and Solis and their scandals, I'd like to hear first what you think, how you think that affects everyday Chicagoans. And then secondly, if I can, I'd like to hear how you think that you're going to be different than a lot of these other candidates that in many ways I consider equally as corrupt. So how will you fix this? And if it's okay, I'm going to hang up and listen to your answer. Okay.
Thank you so much, Scott. Have a great night and be safe.
Scott, thank you so much. Well, first of all, you know, let me just say how is it affecting the race? I think the fact that you have, I call them the four horsemen and women of the apocalypse, also known as the Burke Four. That's Chico, Mendoza, Daley, and Preckwinkle. The fact that they've been martyred in this scandal, and two have very close relationships with Solis, possibly a third does, I think that's the reason that they spent millions of dollars in TV ads, and yet no one has more than 12 or 13% in the polls. I mean, look, you know, Daley spent $2 million, and he's barely budged. I mean, they're throwing some polls out there trying to make it look like it's a two-person race. But even in that poll, I think Daley has like 13%. I mean, his brother used to get 60 to 70%. Granted, once he actually ran against a clown, somebody whose profession was as a clown. So you know, they always had a way of picking and choosing. And I'm not criticizing the person who and or his profession. But the bottom line is that, you know, they were always able to orchestrate things so to minimize the competition. But the bottom line is, I think it's already resonating. So despite their millions, they're not moving in the polls. And that's why the leader of the pack is Undecided. So that's number one. Number two, you know, how am I going to differ with that crew? You know, I need to remind people that when I took over to Chicago Public Schools, I pulled all the construction projects out of the Political Public Building Commission so I could bid those projects competitively without the political interference. Because the Public Building Commission is the entity that would oversee and manage and fund all these construction projects, and the same old contractors would always get the same, you know, would always get to work over and over again. Then they get the contracts, and then you get hit with change orders of 10, 15, 20%. So I pulled all those contracts out. I also pulled the contracts out because I wanted to really open up the bid process. So I went out and I took all the insurance away from the insurance brokers, like Aon Insurance and Near North Insurance. If you remember, Mickey Siegel was CEO of Near North Insurance. He went to jail for, 14 years? Because what they used to do is they used to charge certain firms, particularly minority firms, 3 to 4 times for bonding what they would charge the other firms. So by doing that, I was able to dramatically expand the pool of contractors and vendors. So the net effect is, It became so competitive. I was building schools at $126 a square foot when they were building schools in New York for $400, $500 a square foot. I built the original Walter Payton building for, I think, $25, $30 million.
The school, the high school.
The most expensive high school we built was Northside College Prep for $50 million. We were building additions for $10 million. We were building elementary schools for $21, $22 million. A year after I leave, they pull all the construction projects back into the Public Building Commission, and they built Westinghouse High School for, ready, $110 million. You see, that's the pay-to-play culture around here. So the bottom line is, and look, pay-to-play politicians don't pull construction projects out of the Public Building Commission. They don't run against Rod Blagojevich. Mendoza, Prequickle, Chicle, nor Daley supported me. In fact, John Daley announced his support for Blagojevich 2 weeks before the election. At about the time, Bill Daley's SBC was giving $200,000 in campaign contributions to Rod Blagojevich, who then later passed this anti-consumer legislation for SBC, which in effect could have had a judge not overturn the legislation, doubled people's phone rates. So at the end of the day, after losing to Blagojevich by 1.5%, I went to Philadelphia, did similar reforms in Philadelphia. Then after Hurricane Katrina, devastated New Orleans, I went to New Orleans and rebuilt the school system there. And then after the devastating earthquake killed 250,000 people in Haiti, I went to Haiti. I've been to Haiti 40 times. I went to Chile after the devastating earthquake. I did school transformation projects on the Indian reservations, and I spent a year visiting the prisons, the individual prisons, to look at how to transform adult ed and occupational training. This is not what pay-to-play politicians do. Now, let me tell you what I think we need to do to institutionalize ourselves from the pay-to-play culture, which is sapping our economic vitality. The first thing we need to do is to end aldermanic privilege, period. Aldermanic privilege is not an ordinance. It is not a law. The mayor simply allows the alderman to veto projects, which gives them the ability to shake down homeowners, contractors, businesses, etc. The second thing we need to do is we need to move for real term limits. I'm going to advocate for term limits for the mayor and term limits for the city council. But what the mayor can do is the mayor can immediately impose term limits on committee assignments. So you don't have somebody like Ed Burke chairing the finance committee for 3 or 4 decades. You see, so you're rotating these committee assignments. The third thing that I'm going to do, and this is something you can do automatically, is you bar people from serving on boards if they have conflicts of interest. In other words, if they are hustling contracts with not only the agencies that they oversee, but also other agencies. Gary Chicle, when he was president of the school board, hustled contracts to the tune of where he abstained from voting. Well, I said 500 times, but at the debate, at the Fox debate, he said 400 times. Okay, I'll accept that. 400 times. That places him second to Burke when it comes to major conflicts of interest. Is it illegal? No. Is it ethical? Yeah. I mean, is it unethical? Absolutely. Right. But that's something that you can unilaterally do. So there are structural, there are administrative changes that the mayor's office and only the mayor's office can make. And those are the things that I would do to remove the pay to play, to alter the structure so that the pay to play environment is no longer strangling our economy and strangling people's finances.
Before we go, two things. I have a question from a texter, and then I want to give you an opportunity to share your last thoughts and let people know where to find out more. There's a listener from the 312, and this comes up a lot when it comes to the inequality of education for people of color. This listener believes that you were part of the destruction of public education for the people of color in the city of Chicago. Why should we trust him and that he's going to provide education for everybody when perhaps they didn't do it? He didn't do it in the past.
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, this person is either someone from the campaign or someone who is extremely misinformed. First of all, there was another tall superintendent who ran this district when they were doing Renaissance 2010 in 2004, when I was incidentally in Philadelphia, closing 100 neighborhood schools and converting them to new schools and charters while displacing the kids because there was no guarantee that the kids could return to their neighborhood schools. And of course, we all remember Rahm Emanuel closing schools at about the time I was doing work in New Orleans and then later in Haiti. So the bottom line is I never closed a single school. And you know why? Because we had programs in schools that were increasing our enrollment. The only time in five decades that the schools have seen an increase in enrollment were during my period. And let me point out that I built 78 new schools and renovated over 360 schools, and 90% of those schools are in black and brown communities, period. I also allocated 54% of those construction contracts to minority and women-owned businesses. That's $1.74 billion. And 58% of those people hired to work those contracts were minorities. And that's $1.78 billion. So I think the listener is misinformed, but, you know, I see this stuff, like, circulating all the time. The bottom line is I left the schools with $1 billion in cash balances, six structurally balanced budgets, 17% increase in teacher salaries, with no reneging on any of the contracts. I hired during that period 10,000 teachers, not additional teachers. Obviously, a lot of them were replacement teachers. But guess what? They're all members of the teachers union, and I never closed a single school. So at the end of the day, you know, that record is going to be hard to match. It's only after I departed that they did Renaissance 2010, and they went through the and they began to bring in these politically connected privatizers like Aramark and Sodexo, who were making big campaign contributions, or Magic Johnson, who gave $250,000 to Rahm Emanuel, suddenly got a $10 million contract for an online alternative program. So the bottom line is I think my record is really, really strong.
Now, what do you want, you know, your closing remarks? What do you want to make sure people know about your campaign, what your plans are for the city of Chicago? What's most important to you for them to know?
You've permitted me to talk about what I'm going to do to straighten out the finances and to reprioritize the budget, because with $20 billion, and I'm not even counting the bonds, you know, the money that's generated from construction bonds or some of the other federal resources that can be accessed. But when you consider that the city controls $20 billion, I mean, that $20 billion in, you know, allocated properly, $20 billion in spending where you really prioritize making investments in the community, like investments in public safety, infrastructure, economic development, schools, etc. I mean, that can be... We need to spend our money in ways that invests in the type of programs and initiatives in the communities that allow all our communities to grow. Because 80% of the city over the last four decades has seen little to no investment, with the exception of the schools, the 78 school buildings that I built. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that $20 billion and I'm going to invest it in ways that doesn't kick the can down the road, that addresses the issues of public safety and economic opportunity and high quality schools, and deals with the infrastructure issues like getting lead out of the water, and does not put us in a position where we're imposing draconian property taxes and fees that are adversely impacting working families. I can do it because I've done it before. I can do it because I've balanced 17 multi-billion dollar budgets in four different states, and my work in those four states resulted in me being invited to do similar work abroad.
And where can people find out more about your campaign?
ValusForAllChicago.com. And please get out and vote. And I really urge the listeners to really go to the websites. I mean, this has got... We are all... we're doing job interviews. All these forums that we've attended are really job interviews. And it's important that we have somebody who can, number one, run this city, manage the finances. Number two, understands the neighborhoods in need for equity. And number three is independent. It has demonstrated independence of the pay-to-play machine.
We wish you the very best. And regardless of the outcomes, we'd love to see you again on the show.
Always. Thank you so much. And thanks to your listeners.
Thank you. And we will hear from the Chicago Clarinet Ensemble when we come back after this on 720 WGN. It's the Patty Vasquez Show.